Amen. Well, hopefully you went around and you got a good taste test. And what I want to know is how many of you appreciated letter A better than the letter B? How many of you appreciated letter A better than B? Like no one? Maybe just one person? How many of you appreciated B more than A most of the time? Okay? All right. Did anybody get back to the soup and get it cooled off enough that you could try both of them? Was there like a small difference between A and B, or was there a big difference between big difference? What about the bread? What do you think about the bread? Was there like a small difference or a big difference? Big difference? What did my I didn't even taste them. Did my mashed potatoes turn out at all well? Yeah, someone's gonna just go ahead and tell me they're all good. But what were better? Which was better, the A or the B? B, yeah, clearly, because I didn't touch them. And the cookies over there, were the A cookies or the B cookies better? The B cookies were better? Okay, so around the board, most people in this room thought the B cookies were better, thought the B things were better. How many of you know the difference? Salt. Salt was the difference, the only difference in every one of these recipes. Kristen Hines made some potatoes, and she told me how much butter she used and how much milk she used. It just so happened I didn't actually have the full cup of milk that I thought I had because I was using our mug, which doesn't actually have measurements on the side. But other than that, the recipe was exactly the same as her recipe, just without salt. And I used unsalted butter, too. Over here, the bread. I made both of those loaves of bread, one of them with salt, one without salt. That's the only difference. See, salt is magical. Salt has this magical property that, you know, if you get it right, it makes everything completely better. Let me bring up my screen here so I can show you this stuff as we go through it. But I want to just take you on a journey with me this morning. We're beginning a brand new series that I'm calling BAM, because of the effect of salt in our lives. See, salt has this magical property that it just makes everything better. I mean, take the bread over there. You've got two loaves of bread. You've got, they could be fresh from the oven. They're steaming. They're warm. You just can smell that bread smell in the air, and everything is absolutely perfect. You could go over there. You smell both of them. They're absolutely perfect. They seem perfect. The texture, the crust, it's all working out just well. But you taste it, and it's like nasty. But along comes a little salt, and bam! It's awesome. You got chicken noodle soup in the background. It's bubbling. You know, you got the vegetables in there. You got the celery, the carrots. That was actually one batch. I made that batch yesterday. It was just one batch of chicken noodle soup together. And we split them up this morning and just sprinkled a little bit of salt in letter B. That was it. That was it. And so it's there. It's bubbling. And yet you taste it and it's like nasty. But a little salt comes along, and bam, everything's better. You got the cookies up here, and they got a nice coating of sugar on them. You know, they look good. You think they're going to be good. They're perfect round cookie shape. They got a nice brown on the bottom. Paige Heitzman made those cookies. Mike brought them here this morning. He told me that he tasted them this week. He tasted letter A this week, and they were nasty. But along comes a little salt. And bam, everything's better. Do it one more time, we got the mashed potatoes. And other than the fact that yours truly made the ones on the letter A side, you would look at them and you'd be like, man, mashed potatoes, I love mashed potatoes. Someone even said to me up here, can you mess up mashed potatoes? Oh, yes, you can. Yes, you can. I mean, they're nice, they're fluffy maybe. Maybe you can even get them without lumps, but they can be nasty. And along comes a little salt, and bam, everything's better. Your neighbor is washing his car. He loves his family. He does his job extraordinarily well. Everything about his life looks like it's going right. But you get inside a little bit, and it's nasty. And along comes a little salt, and bam, everything's better. And you're the salt. I'm getting ahead of myself, though, because, see, before we can talk about you being the salt, we have to talk about what salt is in general and what it does. Now, we all know that salt makes things taste better. Too much salt, depending on who you are, can make things taste bad, but the right amount of salt can make it taste amazing and can make a huge difference, even on things that you didn't even know should need it, things that you can't even necessarily taste it ordinarily, but it does make a difference. Flavor, we all know that. But another thing you got to remember is that salt has this preservative effect. In fact, for much of history, salt was so expensive and so rare because of its preservative properties that you couldn't use it in a normal household to flavor things because it was too important to keep your food from rotting. It was more important to make sure your food wasn't rotten than it was to make sure it tasted good. Because if it's tasting good but rotten, it's going to kill you. But if it's good through the middle, and it doesn't taste the greatest, at least you're going to live another day. So salt was a preservative long before. I found this Wikipedia article talking about salt and how it's used. It turns out there are like 3 or 4 different Wikipedia articles about salt and the preservation of food and the things that it can do. And there are all kinds of ways that it preserves food, one of which is that it just absolutely kills bacteria that's on the surface of food. And then it crusts the food so no bacteria can get into the center of the food. And so for centuries, salt's been used that way. It's an amazing, amazing mineral. In fact, salt was so valuable that the ancient Romans used it as currency, and that's why to this day, your monthly paycheck is called a salary, from the word salt. The Romans would pay their soldiers a salary, a salt allowance. And that's where we get the word. Salt was their currency. In fact, jot this down. There are 3 things you need to remember about salt. Flavor, preservation, and value. Flavor, preservation, and value. Anyone who had salt had a great blessing. Salt was so rare. Salt was so expensive, salt was so necessary that if you had it, you had a great blessing. So what if someone told you that you were salt? Well, for us today, it doesn't really click. Number one, we don't really have the sense of how valuable salt is because it's on all of our tables. Every one of us has a table with salt on it. You go to any restaurant in North America and there will be a table with salt on it in these little shakers and it's free. The restaurant doesn't make you pay any extra for the salt. It's free. I mean, you go to a Mexican restaurant, you get the chips and the salsa, but you go to McDonald's and you can get a little packet of salt that then you can break open and sometimes they even have the shakers out in the breakfast. But salt is just, we don't understand the value of it because it's so much everywhere. But one other thing you don't get is that we in our lives already feel really valuable. I mean, even if you've got a low self-esteem, if you live in North America, you feel really valuable in many respects. See, in our society, you're not a slave. No matter how much your boss makes you feel like one, you aren't a slave. In our society, whether you're a man or a woman, you have the same level of status. Now, granted, there's still some areas of the world where it seems like there may be some inequity in certain facets of that relationship, but nonetheless, everyone agrees that men and women are equally valuable. And if you're African American, if you're Asian American, if you're anything else, you're American. And we live in a society where you don't have segregation pushed down from the top on us. Our own prejudices might still remain, but it's not something that's pressured down onto you. We live in a society where we have so much freedom and so much self-worth that it's hard for us to even be impressed by the phrase, you are salt. Not so for the people who heard Jesus when he originally brought up the idea. Because Jesus is the first person to say this, and he said it to a bunch of people who are losers. If you have your Bibles, turn to Matthew chapter 5. And in Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, we read this phrase. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men." I printed that on your note sheet, but you need to go there in your Bible anyway, because you got to see the context of Matthew chapter 5. If you're using the Bibles that we pass out here, it's on page 671. So just go there real quick with me. And you get to Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 1. It says, "Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you, you are the salt of the earth.'" There's a little heading there in our NIV. Scratch those out, because they weren't in the original text. Jesus, when he was talking, he didn't stop there at the end of that phrase, "persecuted the prophets who were before you." Okay, now I'm in a different section. Just so you all know, I'm in a different section. "You're the salt of the earth." No, he's just talking. So what comes before salt of the earth is what informs salt of the earth. And we need to understand who Jesus was looking at. He was looking at a bunch of people who were standing around him. Why? Because they weren't working during the day. This is the middle of the day. Jesus is talking to people. How did all these people get there? Did they go there on their lunch break? I don't know. Did they not have a job? I don't know. There are only two categories of people who don't work: people who are too rich and people who are too poor. And Jesus didn't really gather crowds of people who were too rich. He was looking around, and there were people there who were carpenters who didn't have a job to do that day. And there were people who were, there were people there who were just day laborers. And they didn't have any place to go. People who would work in a vineyard and they didn't have anything to pick that day. Farmers who were just waiting for their ground to hopefully produce something. Jesus was looking at a bunch of Jewish people under a Roman government that was oppressive to them. And all those people were thinking about themselves that they were worthless. And so Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." Being poor in your soul means that you don't have much of your spiritual life to show for anything. You feel empty inside. That's nothing to be proud of, right? We want people who are spiritually full. We want people who are spiritually strong, not those people who are spiritually weak. And yet Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." Or, "Blessed are those who mourn." We don't want people who are mourning. They're not valuable. They're not important. No, Jesus says they're blessed. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst. Blessed are the peacemakers. No, it's warriors we want. See, Jesus looks at these people and he takes all the things that they would say about themselves make them worthless. And he says, "That's what makes you great." And then he says, "You're salt," which for them was the most valuable commodity they knew. More valuable than gold. Because if you're going to pay your soldiers of your country with something, you want to make sure they're well taken care of. And they got salt. And Jesus says to these people, "You're salt." How does that work? How is that possible that these people are absolutely at the lowest rung of society and yet Jesus could place them at the highest rung of society and say, "You're salt"? How is that possible? It's because Jesus is looking at them and he's saying these words to them. It's not because of your social status. It's not because of your level of influence. It's not because of your skill set. It's not because of your talent. It's not because of your brain power. It's not because of your behaviors. It's not because of what you did yesterday or what you did the day before. It's because you're sitting here listening to me that I can tell you you're salt. Jesus is teaching them a new way of viewing the world. He's teaching them a series of understandings, worldviews, lessons about how to see the way God made this world and your place in it. And if you continue reading, this is Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, where he goes through and he begins to tell all kinds of moral guidelines, not the least of which is do to others what you would have them do to you. By hearing his words, they become salt. That's what he's saying to them. I gotta just let you know a little bit about how they got salt in the ancient world. See, we go to the store and we buy salt. You know, they didn't do that. What they did to get salt is that they didn't have the equipment to take seawater and just turn it into salt. So what they needed to do is they would go up to the seashore and find the dirt that was next to the seashore that had dried a little bit, and some of the salt was left in the dirt. And so they would scoop up the dirt or the rocks or the plants, whatever they could get around the seashore that had been soaking in the water. And then that is what they used for salt. So you would take those rocks, those dirt, those piles of dirt, or sometimes the reeds that you would take out of the lake or sea, whatever was salty, you would take those things home with you, and then you would take the plant and you'd rub the plant on your meat. Or you'd take the dirt and you'd rub the dirt on your meat and hope that the dirt didn't have more bacteria in it than the meat already had on its own. They didn't know about bacteria, so it doesn't really matter. But you'd rub that stuff right on the meat, or you'd take the rock that was soaked in salt and you'd scrape that all over your meat. And eventually those things would lose their saltiness, and you would take those reeds that you had pulled out of the river, lake, or whatever that was salty, and you would take those reeds that now no longer were salty, and you'd put them on the roof of your house to thatch it, and people would go up there, and that's where they had their decks. That's where they had their little porches, and they would hang out up there and trample on those reeds. Because it wasn't the salt that became unsalty. It was the thing containing the salt that became unsalty. And what you need to realize is Jesus is there standing in front of these people and he's saying, listen, you're soaking in it right now. You're right next to me. I'm teaching you. You're soaking it up right now. That makes you salt. If you soak it up, then you're salt. Salty doesn't have anything to do with who you think you are or what you can do or your behaviors or the things you've done. It's about who you really are because of what's been put in you. Let me ask you to write this down. This is a key line that shapes everything today. Those who follow Jesus are the world's greatest blessing. Those who follow Jesus are the world's greatest blessing. I wrestled with this a lot. This whole week I had a different phrase for this, because if you look at Jesus' words here, he doesn't say you're a salt. He says you're the salt. The only salt. And therefore, if salt is this great blessing, all week long I was thinking about toying with using this phrase where Jesus' followers are the only source of blessing for the world. And in some respects, I believe that's true, but I didn't want to just say that right here without proving it, without demonstrating it. And so I want to move into proof with you. See, I know you. You're at the low rung of your totem pole in your job. Okay, there are people over you, and they don't seem to respect you. Maybe you actually have a relatively significant position at your job, but there's still other people over you, and they've got influence, and maybe you don't. Maybe in your family, no one ever pays attention to you. Maybe you try to get your point across, but all you get is arguments and anger in return. And you're asking this question, how can I be a source of blessing in that kind of environment? No one's letting me speak. No one's letting me lead. No one's letting me do my thing. How can I be a source of blessing? And Jesus says, it's not what you do, it's what's in you that makes you salt. I have to prove this for you by kind of going through a little bit of history with you. And let's start with today. If I were to say you are the only blessing for the whole world, there's something inside most of us that would recoil against that. They would say, no, that can't be true. One thing, of course, is insecurity. I don't feel good enough to be the source of blessing, the only source of blessing for the whole world. I don't feel good enough to be the world's greatest blessing. You know, I just don't feel good enough about myself. Well, sorry, you're way better than the people Jesus was talking to, and he said it to them, so therefore that excuse is out. So you're not allowed to keep that excuse anymore of saying that you don't feel good enough to be the world's greatest blessing, okay? So let's move on. The second thing is that we live in a society where we've been taught tolerance. We've been taught humility. We've been taught that everybody has a valuable contribution to make, and every group of people has a valuable contribution to make. And so therefore, we don't want to put ourselves on some type of pedestal and say, oh, us Christians, we're the world's greatest blessing. But we don't want to say that, because there's other people out there too. In fact, if you look around us, you can find lots of people in our world who don't believe in Jesus and yet are doing good, right? Have you ever met a person in your whole life or seen someone on TV who doesn't believe in Jesus and yet they're doing good things? Yeah, we've seen it. In fact, there's good all around us. Where do you think it came from? Seriously, it wasn't always like that. If you go back to the time of Jesus, there were slaves. Do you know what a master could do to a slave? Anything. Some slaves were tortured for the entertainment of the masters. Some slaves were tied up and dunked in rivers where there'd be man-eating fish, and they would just watch the people get eaten. Some slaves were poisoned and beaten. In fact, it wasn't until somewhere around the mid-300s AD that poisoning your slave was declared illegal. They could do anything they wanted to slaves. Women could not own property. They were secondary citizens. Maybe even tertiary, third, fourth citizens. No one cared about women. If you were married and you were a guy and you were married, you could do whatever you wanted basically to the woman. You could kick her out for any basic reason whatsoever. And it wasn't until around the 300s when there were laws about why you could or couldn't divorce. What about forgiveness? We live in a society today that understands forgiveness as a value. It wasn't always so. There was a time when to forgive someone, basically, you could be killed for that. Because the other people around you would say, no, you don't forgive people. We're going to get you. We're going to take you out just so that there's none of that forgiveness going on. What about self-sacrifice? You realize that almost every one of our love stories in our culture, almost every single English love story involves some form of self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice was not always a romantic concept. It was not always an honorable concept. In fact, back in Jesus' day, it was frowned upon. It was scorned. No one thought that anyone should ever sacrifice themselves for someone else. It was unheard of. All of these things come out of the worldview taught by Jesus. And inasmuch as these things are present in our society today, it's because somewhere over the past 2,000 years, someone somewhere was salt. Someone somewhere took the teaching of Jesus, let it soak into them, and then they lived it out so that it rubbed off onto other people, so that eventually the world became salty enough that we could look at it today and say it's all good. Jot this down. If you think about all the good that there is in our world, you'll be able to trace it back to the worldview taught by Jesus. You'll be able to trace it back to the worldview taught by Jesus. The world got salty, but something happened. For about the last 100 years especially, something has happened in our world, and the momentum has been building ever since. It goes something like this. At some point, I'm not exactly sure where you can draw the line, but at some point, the people in our world began to get the feeling that the world around them was salty enough. Okay? The world around them was good enough. And what they decided to do was to say, we've heard what Jesus taught about love and self-sacrifice. We've heard what Jesus taught about forgiveness. We've heard what Jesus taught about being a peacemaker and being humble. We've heard all these things that Jesus talked about. We're okay with that right now. We're just going to stop right there. We're going to stick with the 90% of the stuff Jesus talked about, which is, you know, how you live your life and how you relate to other people. And we're going to stop where Jesus says, I'm the only way, the truth, and the life. We're going to stop where Jesus says, I'm the only way you get to the Father. We're going to stop where Jesus says, if you don't believe in my name, you stand condemned. We're not going to go there. We're just going to take all the other stuff, the 90% of the stuff Jesus talked about, and that's salty enough. And now, once you got your salt in the cookies, it's time for some sugar. It's time for some frosting, time for some chocolate, time for some nuts, time for all the fancy things that go on the top and around the sides to make this thing awesome, but you had to have the salt there to begin with. But there's enough salt. The world thinks there's enough salt. And you know what Christians did? Somewhere along the path, Christians decided that if the world wants to have its salt and its sugar, then we have to somehow find a way to fight. And Christians did an amazing two things. They split the preservation from the flavor. See, a long time ago, the preservation and the flavor were linked. Do you realize that back in the earliest days of the Christian church, there was a practice going on in Rome where you were legally allowed, if you were the parent and you had just delivered a child, you were legally allowed to take that child to the outskirts of town, drop it off on the ground, and walk away. If you did not want that child, it was called exposure. You were allowed to take the animal out to where you didn't kill it. It wasn't infanticide. You didn't kill the child. You just happened to accidentally, on purpose, leave it in a place where the wolves of the night would come and eat it. That was allowed. And you know what the early Christians did? They would get up in the middle of the night and they would walk out to the outskirts of town and they would pick up these crying babies, bring them back into the town, adopt them, and raise them as their own. Pretty soon, people began to realize that, man, those Christians have lots of babies. And eventually, the word got around what was happening. And what started out as Christians just being Christians made life better for everybody. It made life better for the infant. It made life better for the community because the community slowly but surely began to realize that every human life has value. And if you can say that every human life has value, that has repercussions across the broadest spectrums of society. And if you start with the infants and say that every infant life has value, then it has repercussions across the broadest spectrums of society. It was good for the people. It was tasty. And so the preservative aspect of the Christians was also something that flavored the society. But then when the world decided it was salty enough, Christians decided, well, we have to opt for one or the other. Either we have to shoot for preserving the world against the problems, or we have to shoot to flavorizing the world that doesn't want our flavor. I'll just give you one more illustration about this. If you take the value of every human life having significance. Jesus taught that. Well, one step beyond that is now every individual life is important. And if every individual life is important, we come to 1776, where the founding fathers of this country explored a grand new experiment called democracy that said every individual human life has the right to vote in this country. And then about 200 years later, that right eventually reached all the rest of society. Women and African Americans, everybody could then have that right to vote. And so it took that long time for the individualism to sort of develop to the point where everybody had equal rights, okay? But then in the 60s, it began to flip because they had gotten enough individual rights. Now it was time for individual expression. And there's nothing in Jesus' teaching that says every individual needs to be able to believe what they want, express what they want, do what they want, feel what they want, say what they want, that kind of stuff. Individual expression is not part of Jesus' teaching. It's another step further. The world found it was individual rights. That's good. That's the salt. But then they said, we need a little bit of sugar to add to this. We need something else beyond what Jesus says. And so then now we live in a world where individual expression is all the rage. And I can't tell any other individual person in this world that their beliefs are wrong. Because they're entitled to their own beliefs. They're entitled to their own opinions. And individual expression has become the rule of the day. And so Christians have decided to split preservative from flavor. And a lot of Christians have ended up doing this thing. You're wrong. You're wrong. Oh, and by the way, you're wrong. And I'm just going to find all the parts of society that I don't agree with, and I'm just going to point out that they're all wrong. And because of doing that, we live in a world that is withdrawn from us. See, what we've done is we've stood off to the side and way back, and we've reached out an arm's length, and we've found all the problems in our society, and we've dashed salt into those wounds. And the people who are broken and hurting by those problems in our society, who are already feeling the pain of that stuff, have withdrawn. Because all they ever get from us is salt. And we're pouring it in their wounds. But you know what? In fact, jot this down. The world, already pretty salty, sees Christians as oversalting and not very palatable. So here's the last piece. What do we do about it? What do we do? I think the solution is found in recognizing what Jesus actually said and what he did not say. Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. You are the salt of the earth. Salt is not a verb. Salt isn't something Jesus told you to do. Salt is something Jesus tells you you are. And who you are rubs off on people. And those who follow Jesus are the world's greatest blessing. If they follow Jesus, Jesus soaks into them. And where they go, their life can be just a blessing by just rubbing off on people. Not by standing off at an arm's length and shaking salt wherever we see woundedness. That's not the way to do it. But to say, okay, salt's preservative aspect is going to be in me. I'm going to be preserved. And I'm going to preserve myself. I'm going to make sure I'm following Jesus. I'm going to make sure I'm doing me right. And then I'm going to bless the world. I'm going to bless their socks off. And I don't have to worry about trying to salt their wounds because I'm just going to bless and I'm going to be. I'm going to stand for what's right in the way I live my life. If there's a baby that needs to be rescued, I'm not going to yell at the people who took it out. I'm going to go get it. That's living in a way that follows Jesus. Jot this last thing down. Over the next 4 weeks, we're going to focus on these things. We follow Jesus and we bless the world. We follow Jesus and we bless the world. We're in a 4-week journey together where I want to challenge you to be the biggest possible blessing you can. Granted, we start with the fact that you need to check yourself. You need to salt yourself a little bit. You need to be some salt by soaking in the salt and letting Jesus affect your life. If Jesus' word fills you, let me give you an example. If you have a problem with the fact that our world has a lot of divorce in it, get your marriage act together. Don't fight against the issue of divorce. Instead, bring your marriage under the lordship of Jesus. Have him be in charge of your life. Have him be in charge of your marriage. And then let your marriage shine for what it should be. You don't have to tell other people what their marriage should be. Just do it. Let it be in you, because you are the salt. You have a problem with the way our world handles sexual ethics? Well, be sexually pure. Just live out what Jesus talks about. Don't point fingers. Don't tell the world they're messed up. Just be the solution to what is messed up with the world. And so now, you've got the opportunity. This next month, I want to show you, we've got the opportunity to be a blessing. I want to show you, there's this card we've made up, and we're going to pass them out here in just a bit. We've got 1,000 of these cards, and so I'm going to ask every one of you to take 2, maybe 3 of these cards. There'll be more available next week. You can get some more, but this is how we're going to do this thing. This is a BAM card, and what I want you to do is I want you to find a way to shock someone. I was trying to think of a way of making BAM sort of an acronym, like Bless a Million. And then I thought, well, and I don't have enough money to buy 1,000,000 cards. So that means we'd have to, if we only have 1,000 cards, then we'd have to have every one of you, you know, bless like 1,000 people with one card. That would be, and there are not even that many people in Lafayette, so I can't do Bless a Million. So then I thought, well, maybe the next one we could say, blessings are miracles. But that's not really fun. That's more cheesy. And so the one I'm settling on just goes like this. Be amazing. Yeah, that wasn't any better, was it? So here it is. You're going to go ahead and pass out these cards. Our welcome team is going to be helping out. That's what it says on the front. On the back side, it says this. You've just been blessed. And if there's something that you did that the person's not going to know it, then you can go ahead and fill it out on the back side, what you did for them. But we're talking like random acts of kindness. We're talking crazy different opportunities. I don't know what kind of opportunity you might have, but here are just a couple ideas. You can go to the Starbucks drive-in line, drive-through line, and then buy your coffee and then tell them that you want to pay for the coffee of the person in the car behind you and then leave a card in the window. You know, and so they come up to the front, and I heard there was a band that did this once, a band named Third Day did this once, and then they came back to the same Starbucks later in the afternoon to get another cup of coffee, and they found out that someone had paid for their coffee when they went through the drive-thru. It had kept going all day long. You could bless 1,000,000 people just by doing something like that and let that ball roll a little bit. So then on the backside, you might want to write down what you did. You could do something that's just sort of spontaneous, something that's awesome, something that's incredible, but something that's worthy of saying, bam, you've been blessed. Something that shocks people. Something that lets them know there's some salt still in this world that doesn't intend to wound them, but intends to flavor by being a blessing. I want to give you the opportunity to be some salt today. Right after the service, we're going to go into the neighborhood and we're going to pass out some salty popcorn. And we're going to invite people to a movie night where at that movie night, we're going to have some salty popcorn available. And I know it's hot today, but that means people are in their houses. And so you can put something on the doorknob, knock and run if you want to do that. And they'll be like, what is this? I hate it when people put stuff on my door. Oh, popcorn. And be like, yeah. So we can be that salt today. I also want to invite you tonight. Tonight at 5 o'clock, we're having an event here that we call Living Water. It's an advanced training session we're going to have an extended time of worship music, and we're going to be talking about how to share our faith with other people and how to spread it a little bit, how to rub off on other people. That's tonight at 5 o'clock right here. But what I want you to do right now is just take a moment to reflect. Because see, the beginning part of the BAM process. Before you can bless the world, you have to follow Jesus. You have to let him soak into you. And so I want to ask you right now to spend some time in reflection with God. The band's going to come on up here. We're going to play a little bit of just some instrumental music to give you the opportunity to reflect and jot down some thoughts on that Connect card. On the back side of the card is your place to just write down some thoughts on what God is saying to you right now. Or maybe you want to use this opportunity and spend it in some prayer and just say, God, in this place, I want to know what it means to follow you completely.